You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. What up, what up? Episode 65 of the Reinvest Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. We've got kind of a fun episode here today. We've got three members from our office here. We're joined with us by the first ever Reinvest Podcast guest, Jeff freaking Dahlman. No, we're excited today to be full circle. We had sat down, I think, about a week ago, and as we were doing some end of the year review, you were doing that personally with yourself. Mm-hmm. You were looking at some of just the real estate developments and you know, you're kind of the senior guy in terms of how long you've been investing in real estate out of our team.
Yep.
So you've got some runway that we can look back on and see what's happened in that amount of time, which we're going to jump in today. But first, before we do that, I just wanted to also talk about, you might hear us talk more about Level 5 Capital moving forward on our podcast channel. That is our business partnership that we started. When I say we, Seth, you, myself, our other team member, Dave. And that was the Mobile Home Podcast episode that we just released a couple weeks ago. That mobile home acquisition happened through Level 5 Capital.
That's right.
And Level 5 Capital is really a way to create passive investments for people who don't want to be the active portion of real estate. Or maybe they have their active portion, but they're looking to diversify into something a little more hands-off. And so we're really excited about that. In 24, that's going to be a big emphasis for us.
It is. We were able to be a part of a 96-unit acquisition here in the area in the fall, and we're not directing that investment, but we were a co-GP, and we were able to raise money for that and get our investors some really great returns.
Yeah.
And completely hands-off returns. And that's really what we're focused on, is trying to find those kinds of high-quality commercial investments that we can manage or that we can acquire and then teach people how they can kind of ride our coattails and take advantage of some of the things that we're creating. So,
and the size level on those are going to be larger, bigger. Correct. To tackle, which creates a scale to even allow people to partner with us in that capacity.
Yeah, that's right.
So excited about that. But today's episode, Jeff, we're going to get into looking at one of your partnerships, your entities, and the emphasis is when you're using all the tools in real estate that we talk about with investors, with clients on a podcast channel, what is the power of all that when you put them together?
That's right.
So give us some context to the partnership and the portfolio that we're going to be looking at today.
So this entity is just my wife and I. It didn't start off that way. Before I was married, actually, this goes back quite a ways.
Like how far?
Like 20 years ago.
just kidding.
22 years ago, something like that. My sister and I got to talking, and my mom and dad didn't have much of a retirement. And so we started looking at trying to find an investment that we could get into that would be able to boost their retirement. Bottom line was, we ended up buying in a small college town. We bought a kind of a mixed use building. It was 11 units, had a chiropractor in one portion of the building, and then 10 other apartments in it. And
It sounds glamorous.
It wasn't glamorous. It was rough. It needed a lot of work. And we ended up buying that property creatively. We ended up buying it no money down. At the time, it had been on the market for 3 years when we bought it.
Wow.
So the market was completely different than it is today, especially in the multifamily space. those assets were not moving back.
That's hilarious because now all of us, you know, listen to this episode are like, man, you can't even find an 11 unit. You know what I mean? You can't even find it, let alone one that's been on the market for years.
Yeah, it was completely different back in those days. And it even when we sold it 12 years later, it took us like 2 years to sell it.
Wow. So you bought it 2005-ish. That was kind of when the market was like that. But even when you went to sell it in 2017, the market still hadn't.
Well, and it just, you know, it's a small college town, so it's not like, you know, there's tons of people trying to find
a high growth market, you know.
And it sounds like a unique property altogether.
It was very unique. And but we put a lot of money into it. We did a lot of the work ourselves. Was my parents were with us, and then my sister, and my sister lives in Boston area, so she's not even around here, but she, you know, was like our accountant type of thing. She's a money person, numbers person, and so she was helping us with the accounting and everything. And my parents and myself were the hands-on people. I was basically managing it the whole time. And
I want to pause. The purpose of it was, because everybody has a why when they get into real estate. For this specific project, it was for the purpose of setting your parents up for retirement.
That's right. They didn't have a retirement, and we wanted, my sister and I wanted to help them create something that had some value that could help them with that.
And also, you said you bought it creatively with no money down. Can you just explain what that was?
Yeah, it was a $375 purchase at the time. We got the seller to do a carry back of $50,000. That was, I believe it was a 5-year balloon on that, and maybe a 10-year. I can't really remember specifically, but I know that we ended up paying him, you know, off at one point. But then my grandmother, we ended up doing a small private loan from my grandmother as well, and that was how we ended up getting into the property, no money down.
And they used conventional financing for the rest.
Yes, and I had found a local banker. Who actually, he's not there anymore, but the bank is still the bank that I use for this entity. And they've been phenomenal, you know, with me.
He told me he gave you your start.
He really did. He believed in me. He took a chance on me.
Yeah.
I had talked to lots of investors over in this area, and they were all scared to death of this property. And it was just too big for a lot of people to wrap their brain around in this little tiny small market. And we felt like it was the right thing for us, you know?
So that was your first main acquisition. I think you added another triplex in there in that partnership.
We did. And then we ended up selling it and then using the cash that we made from that to kind of finally finish stabilizing this 11 unit before we went to sell it.
And it sat on the market for a couple of years, you said, before it sold. And so then what was the outcome when you sold? What was kind of the outcome for your partners? And then what did you do next?
So we had paid down the mortgage we had cash flowed positively the whole time we had it. It probably cash flowed probably $800 to $1,000 a month the whole time we had it. So it was a good investment. It wasn't a waiter, you know, didn't.
You weren't putting money in, you know, from out of your pockets, doing cash calls every quarter.
No. And then we tried to use the cash flow as what we reinvested back into it. We had paid down the mortgage to about $200,000, I think, $210,000. So there was a lot of, we sold it for 4.25. So we had quite a bit of money to work with. And I was able to pay off my sister and my parents to get them out of the entity, which was the whole idea. You know, we started it that way so that we'd give them, you know, some cash to work with.
Yeah.
And then my wife and I just took over the entity, and we've been doing it ever since, just her and I.
So this is what I wanted to, I mean, if you're listening, sometimes numbers can go over your head just because it's like, you know, you're not seeing it in front of you visually, but you guys bought it for $375. You sold it for 4.25. That's not really life-changing money.
No.
But it cash flowed positive for the 12 years to hold it.
Yes.
And you were able to pay down the mortgage and use the tax depreciation during that time as well.
That's right, yeah.
Well, the tenants paid down the mortgage.
The tenants paid down the mortgage, right.
So, and this is what was cool, I think, about this case study is, it's not like a highlight reel of like, I found these deals that no one else could find. This thing was on the market for 3 years. It was a pain in the butt for everybody in the community. Nobody was, had the stones enough to tackle it. You guys did. You didn't do phenomenal on it, but what was working for you were the things that we always talk about, the fundamentals of real estate, principal pay down, appreciation, cash flow.
That's right. And what I get excited about, the reason I was excited to come on and talk about this today was, when I went back and did this full case study up to 2023, 2024 here, where we're at now, is the looking back on it is so powerful. And it's stuff that anybody can do. I did things with this entity that literally anybody could do. Now,
right.
Since then, I bought out my partners. We 1031, my wife and I 1031 exchanged the money into 9 units, 8 houses in the Lima area after that. And there was a package of houses, 2 different packages of houses basically that I bought. And they were both off market and just people that I had known, investors that I had known that had reached out to me. And the one I really felt like at the time I was paying retail for, I didn't feel like I was really getting any kind of a deal at
this
all.
This is in 2017. You were like, okay, this is, but because you were in a 1031 scenario, you could pay retail because you didn't want to face the tax obligation.
Well, that's it. I mean, we were up against the wall. We had to do something. And I know that that's probably, some people will say that's a negative about a 1031, and it is. But there's still a power in that because we avoided all that tax that we would have had to have paid.
Well, it wasn't like you were going to, it's not like the house package you went into, it was losing money. It wasn't like negative cash flow. It was still a cash flowing asset. It just wasn't a good deal.
Right. We were paying retail and you're right. The rents were okay. They weren't great, but they were okay. And we were able to make it work, I guess. We ended up doing 4 out of the 9 units that we bought. 4 of them were empty right out of the gate. And so we had to do rehabs on those right out of the gate and get those up and running. So within 6 months, we were cash flowing pretty nicely in that, in that entity. So.
Well, I was just looking at my notes here. When you bought it, the rent roll was like $3,700. And after the 7 months, you had taken it to $7,200.
That's right.
Which is pretty substantial.
Yeah. Now, and that we didn't touch this entity other than improving the properties. We literally held onto those units for 7 years straight. We didn't sell anything. We didn't add to it. We didn't subtract. And then last year,
well, 1 second, let me back up just a second. There was a creative finance component.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And when you guys bought that package,
I didn't have enough money, to finalize the 2 purchases. So one of the sellers did a $50,000 carryback that I was able to use for my down payment when I was buying those units.
Which
allowed
you to actually retain more money in your pocket to pay your partners off.
That's
and
right.
Roll into this with just you and your wife.
That's right. It was a way for us not to have to come up with as much cash. And like you said, we paid off my parents.
Why did this seller agree to do that?
She just didn't need the money. And what it does for her is she didn't have to pay tax then on that part of the sale. Mm-hmm. And then it created income that she knew she could count on monthly for 5 years. And then at the end of the 5 years, she got, I think it was ended up being like $41,000 at the end of the 5 years that she ended up getting from me because we had paid down that mortgage just a little bit.
So this is something that over my time in real estate, it's taken me a while to learn. But the very reasons that you want to get into real estate, you own real estate, are the same reasons other people also own real estate. So what I mean by that is there were tax advantages that within the 1031 exchange that caused you to use that. Her doing a seller carryback helped her spread out taxes and minimize her tax liability. So it's like both investors on both sides of the equation were looking on how do I defer, reduce, or spread out my tax burden so I can pay less money to the government. And it ended up being a win-win scenario.
That's exactly right. I get so excited about these little things because it's all about educating yourself and helping you to get the most out of what is possible instead of looking at, hey, we can't do this because of this, this, and this. It's what is possible and thinking outside the box and creating, you know, opportunities. And that's
and the sky's the limit, really, on how creative you can get, you know. And there are ways to still make creative finance because sometimes creative finance is like this. There's these gymnastics you got to do. It's it doesn't have to be that.
No.
And there are complex creative finance deals that can work, but it was simple. It met a need for you. It met a need for the investor. So
up to this point, we've had a private loan from a family member. We've had two seller carrybacks and a 1031 exchange.
That's right.
So far, no money out of your pocket.
No, we literally, all the money that we put in the real estate came this whole came out of cash flow.
That's crazy.
And sometimes we would loan to the entity, but we would always get it back.
Right.
So we did that, you know, with my family, and then my wife and I have done that since.
So 2017, you buy this new package. It ends up paying you and your wife over $124,000 over that time.
So a 5-year period, we averaged about $25,000 a year. Yeah.
You loaned the entity $108,000 to do some of the rehabs, but it was able to pay you over 5 years, $124,000, and then still pay back the money that you had used to do the rehabs.
That's correct.
So you're looking at like $230,000 in excess of cash flow from these properties.
That's right.
And it started with a little dumpy 11 unit in a college town with no money down out of your pocket.
That's
now,
right.
It's taken time.
Yes.
But that's, you know, listen, I think the gurus out on YouTube are like, in 90 days, you can have 50 units and $10,000 in your pocket. And like, real estate takes time.
It does. Yeah,
it takes time. It takes 5 years to really chuck away at a mortgage and see some equity you know, created from your principal pay down. It takes time to reinvest in the property so that your rents are strong. It takes time to do this. Time was on your side, and now it's working for you. So what did you end up doing then after 2023, this last year?
So we had the rent roll from 7,100. We had it all the way up to 8,700 last year.
And that's with minimal oversight, just rent increases, time.
And there's third party property management on these units. So that's another thing I want to point out is I'm not managing these units.
Which is a big deal because just because you have a sizable portfolio doesn't mean that you have passive income. It means you have a job.
Yeah, that's right.
So since you've been able to incorporate third-party management, your thought process, your mental load, your physical load on this has been pretty low.
That's right. Yeah, I don't spend much time, you know, thinking about it, but I do every quarter, every month, every, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, we're planning and kind
of
making.
How much time a month or a week do you think you spend on this entity?
I would say 2 to 3 hours, maybe a quarter. You know, so it's not much.
Wow.
But now last year I probably spent more time than I've spent the whole time because I did end up selling two different properties. One was a duplex and did a 1031 into a brand new duplex, a brand new build duplex in a much better area. And then I sold a small single family house and did a 1031 into four single family houses. In two different transactions. And so we, you know, took equity and I cashed out quite a bit of equity. It was almost $90,000 in the one transaction that we cashed out and $75,000 in the other transaction that we cashed out. So pretty significant. What I really wasn't anticipating was that real estate prices have really, you know, grown in the last few years.
Right.
And I never really saw that coming. And so I wanted to take advantage of that, and that's why we cashed those two out.
Well, and some people would say, oh, you timed the market. Jeff, you were in the market in 2005. It was time in the market. And when you have time in the market long enough, you're going to see the real estate cycle. So 2017 is when things really started to ramp up. 2018, you know, so you bought those house packages at the right time, but because you had been investing for the last decade and a half.
Right. Yeah, It just happened. And so we decided to cash out that equity, go into these four other houses. And so now we have the possibility, I have two rehabs going on right now that we'll finalize this. But by the end of this quarter, we'll be up to 14,000, almost 15,000 a month in rent roll.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Now, you have more debt than you did back in the day.
Yes.
But every month, more of your principal gets paid down.
That's right.
And your cash flow is like $5,000 or will be when you get these rented out.
Yeah.
For something that requires a couple hours every couple months of your attention. And again, the story isn't look how awesome you are. It's look how awesome real estate is.
That's exactly
when you
right.
stick with it long enough, it will.
I've helped tons and, you know, as an agent, I'm also an agent. So I've helped tons of people do this exact same thing. And
yeah.
that's my point to all them is that anybody can do this stuff. If you educate yourself, if you can't educate yourself, find a mentor that knows this stuff so that, mm-hmm. that they can help you. And I've mentored dozens and dozens of investors to help them do the same things. The only reason I wanted to do this case study was not to tout me, but to show how powerful
it's possible.
Yeah,
it's possible.
How powerful these principles are.
So, and it's okay if you don't know the answer to this question, but do you know roughly about how much in taxes you deferred by those, what, three or four exchanges you did?
I would guess
probably $100,000, right?
Probably at least $100,000. Yeah, at least.
So now, the reason that's important.
Now we just had appraisals done on a bunch of these properties, and the appraisals combined with what I know about a few of the others. Now the real estate in this entity is worth almost $1.5 million,
mm-hmm.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy.
And the first thing you started with in the entity was worth $375,000.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just
well,
it's
that grew nuts. A little bit.
You have 12 units in there, which is really similar to what you had before, but the quality of the assets that you have are so much different.
Right.
So it's not just about like unit count.
No.
Anybody can look at unit count. It doesn't tell the full story. The quality of the assets are higher. You know, these were retail houses, and so that's, you know, been one of the big things.
They were good areas. They're all of them are really couple of them are maybe C areas, but all the rest of them are in, I would say, at least B areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. B minus areas.
I just wanted to highlight some of that stuff. People talk about 1031 exchanges. They talk about seller carrybacks in theory, but it's good to attach it to a real story to know that it's possible and why, in a real case scenario, why would somebody do that? The 1031 exchange, it's as simple as a phone call to a qualified intermediary and setting it up before closing. Like, it's possible. It's very doable. It's not like this big elaborate thing that requires all this time. You did it on single family houses. It wasn't a massive apartment complex, your 1031. It was,
That's right.
Sold a single family house and now I'm buying three single family houses.
Right. And it's literally, we use IPX 1031. And it's, you can email them and say, hey, you know, this is what I want to do. And they'll set you up. You have to sign some paperwork and then they handle it.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's so simple. I mean, and it's $1,000, you know, per exchange. It's not a lot of money. We're not talking right. about huge dollars and they just take it out of the proceeds. You don't even have to write them a check. You know?
If you had a property that you wanted to buy and you know that by selling the one that you have, your tax liability, let's say it's going to be $8,000, which is not unthinkable. It's a pretty common tax scenario, especially when you're talking about real estate and appreciation. It would still be worth it for you to pay $1,000 to defer that taxes into another investment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I tell people, we, you know, there's a lot of different aspects of this 1031. If you do it in the first 45 days, if you have your 1031 put together or like you have another property pending before you close on your, on the first property, a lot of the rules don't even apply because there's like the 45 day identification period. You don't even have to identify if you close in that first 45 days, which gets you out of some of the other rules.
Stipulations.
Yeah. So it's a pretty powerful tool actually. And then, you know, the other side of it is all the creative seller creativity stuff. You know, that's just a matter of finding the right seller that understands that if they don't take all the money right now, they're going to pay less taxes. I met with a client last week and they have a very expensive property that they're, at least for our area, it's expensive, $2 million property that they're going to sell, and they don't really have much debt on. And I was explaining that to them, and they were completely open to it, because they started to realize that if they have to pay all those taxes up front on that, right when they sell, that it's going to be a huge tax burden. And they've had it for so long, they're going to have the depreciation payback is going to be huge, and they're going to get hit in every way.
Yep.
So I talked to them about both 1031 exchange and seller carryback, because it could, both of those things could help defer tax for them.
Defer till you die.
Well, and there's a lot of people that would like to do creative finance or find a seller finance scenario. And, you know, to your point, both, I mean, when you were able to do it, it was with a client that you already had known, you'd already rubbed shoulders with them, you'd already built a relationship, you'd already built trust. And so that's why we tell people you should probably be networking with people. You should probably be going to the investor meetups. You should probably find out other investors, you know, who are the other investors in your area and how can you learn from them and serve them and partner with them? Because I don't know, is it, do you think if you were completely cold with that client, you'd never met them before, do you think they would have trusted you enough to do a carryback?
Well, the seller on the one did it, but he did it out of desperation that he wanted to sell the property. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but the one that on the seller where I bought the package, I had a relationship with them. Yes. And I was in the middle of selling all these other properties for them. And so they didn't really need the money, and they knew that they were, you know, they weren't going to be in a situation where they were going to have a lot of tax to pay. So, so there was motivation there, and for them to get a deal done, it was an easy, it was just like, oh yeah, that's an easy answer. So I do believe having the relationship with them was huge in them making that decision, but it worked. It made sense.
Mm-hmm. That's good. All right, we're going to jump into our smaller pockets. So, Jeff, this is the part of the story where you tell us your worst real estate deal. It could be within this entity. It could be something else. But what happened? What went wrong? And what did you learn from it?
So, Garrett was asking me this morning, do I have a story from this entity? And there was this one unit that had needed a lot of work at this 11 unit in that college town, the first property in this entity, and that we bought, and it was open for years, and I put a tenant in there without it being finished.
Oh.
And the reason was he sold me on, well, my dad is a contractor and he can do all the work, and you know, and here's what
it was. So he was just desperate to get into something, I guess.
He was. And it was a cool unit. But anyway, he really sold me hard on, you know, going in there and fixing it. And they did. They ended up fixing it and making it a much better unit. But his dad is on a ladder at one point, and he's up in the like the attic, and he ends up falling through the attic panels into a hallway and creating a bunch of damage and getting hurt. And so it was, oh my gosh, it was crazy. So I almost had like a lawsuit on my hands. We ended up, I forget how we made the concession. Somehow we ended up making some concessions. I think it was maybe rent concessions and maybe even paying for his dad's
medical bills or something.
Yeah, medical bills and stuff. So anyway, it was a mistake. I will have always said ever since, I'll never do this again. You know, I'll never rent something that's not ready to go. Dude, you know,
I just imagine you standing in a courtroom and the judge is like, let me get this straight. You allowed the tenant to move into an unfinished space. You let his dad work on your building.
Probably not a qualified contractor with insurance.
Yeah. Probably not. You know, I remember that we did supply some materials, but I'm telling you, I would never do that again.
And you'd have gotten your lunch eaten, man.
Oh, man. And what's crazy about this guy ended up having some problems, and he ended up moving, and it was kind of a negative scenario. Well, we've made up since, and he's one of my tenants now in this entity.
Oh wow.
So you know,
that's crazy.
It, you know, there's always redemption, you know, is what it? I mean, but what is cool is that you don't have to do something like that, you know what I mean? You can take the hard stand as, listen, we're gonna put the money in it, make sure it's ready before we're ever gonna rent something. That is my advice to you.
is his dad working for you? You've learned your lesson. Dude, I'll never, sorry, this is our, you know, a little nugget store, little smaller pocket store. Dude, so I was touring an apartment building, and the owner and his maintenance guy, they were taking us through the building, and it was a multi-story building. So we got to the top, and we wanted to get out onto the roof, so we had to go up a ladder that took us into an attic that then took us up under the roof. And it was sketchy because you, like, went up the ladder, and then you have to kind of, like, army crawl on these planks that went across the joist to get to a finished portion that walked up to the floor.
And you're ducking, you're crouching, and it's even hard. You belly crawl to get out onto the roof. It was a real small opening.
No lighting, no lights whatsoever. It's dark. And this maintenance guy is like north of 70. Okay.
Wow. You think that old?
Dude, I'm telling you. So we get out onto the roof. Okay. We're coming back through. And because it was so sunny outside, your eyes were adjusting to the darkness. You can't see a thing. And we're getting to the ladder, Seth and I. And then we look around.
Maintenance guy's behind us.
And we just hear like a, and people are shouting, and this maintenance guy he's dangling from, he is propped up on two elbows, and he went through the ceiling.
He fell through the ceiling. Into a unit.
Into a unit. And he's dangling, and he is like seconds away from falling like 10 feet.
And these units, it was on the, that unit would have been the top floor of the residential units, and the ceilings are really tall. I mean, probably like 9 or 10 foot ceilings.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're like pulling him out of this hole, dude.
So luckily he caught himself, and then it just kind of, you know, we got down the ladder, and we're like riding the elevator down, and we're like, he almost died. We were like, it kind of rattled you a little bit. You were like, we were just here for a tour, man.
So yeah, no, that stuff happens. That happens. All right. Fun stories. You do real estate long enough, you're going to have those. But let's go into our show segment called Our Little Nugget. So there's a lot of practical takeaways, a lot of advice from this episode. But Jeff, if you could kind of boil it down, what's one takeaway that you want our listeners to walk away with?
I guess it would be being educated enough and open-minded enough to be able to look at deals in a new way, to where you can, you know, create that wealth for mm-hmm. yourself or for your family, and not get stuck in a box, because mm-hmm. there's opportunity all around us. And you know, I didn't do anything special. These properties I bought literally did nothing special, you know, but I just applied simple tools mm-hmm. and used simple tools to our advantage. And looking back, it's just crazy what it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's the real estate that's so powerful, you know, and the tools, you know, can be as well. And, and I feel like, the education piece is just so important. You know, I watch, YouTube videos a lot. I listen to podcasts a lot. I read books a lot. And so I've been a student of this mm-hmm. for probably 30 years now, you know, and that's the reason why, you know, I feel like sometimes you educate yourself and then you can start to identify opportunities because of how you educated yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That muscle begins to get stronger. You know, your vision becomes attuned, and you know, it's funny. I look at things that I see as opportunity now, that if somebody would have plopped that in my lap 7 years ago, I wouldn't have known what to do with it. I'd have been like, oh, you want to sell a building? Well, let me connect you to a local brokerage so you can do that. You know, but now my mind jumps into all of these different channels of like, well, how could we get this bought? You know, or who would this be good for? How could this be approached and tackled? It's been good.
So what an agent, one of my favorite things to do is to help people do these things for themselves.
Yeah.
And help them grow the wealth for their families the same way I've done it. And that's kind of the reason why I did this case study, was because I wanted to be able to show people that anybody can do this stuff,
mm-hmm.
but that the end result can be super powerful.
Yeah, that's good. What's been one of the best resources for you in the last 12 months?
I would say, I mean, I hate to be a broken record, but I use Bigger Pockets all the time. I'm a pro member of Bigger Pockets, And I use their evaluation tools all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I literally evaluate every deal I look at for myself. I go out there and I, you know, plug in the information and, you know, it prints out a beautiful report, 3-page report. That is such a great, and there's a BRRRR version of it. There's a rental version of it. There's a flip version of it. There's a Airbnb version of it.
Powerful
tools.
They
really are. They're great.
Well, and what's wild is they've done a really good job of building out Bigger Pockets as a platform. So that's just one of the benefits that you get.
Right.
There are a few places you could go to spend that money monthly and invest in yourself through education, through networking, through those tools and resources. Don't you use a property management software they connected you with?
Yeah, if you're a pro member with Bigger Pockets, you get all that stuff. There's some other subscriptions that you get. One of them is Rent Ready you get for free, which is like if you have a small portfolio of properties and you were wanting to self-manage them, I use Rent Ready. And so that's just something I get to use free because I'm connected with, you know, Bigger Pockets Pro subscription, but which is expensive. But it has a lot of benefits. We use it all the time. I use Rent Ready all the time. It lets me collect my rent. So
yeah,
we're not trying to advertise for them. This is not sponsored.
So lastly, Jeff, I'm trying to think kind of the best way to do this. I mean, people are you're pretty easy to find. But what would you say if somebody wanted to kind of like just understand more about this case study, how they could do this for themselves? How would you want people to connect?
I mean, they can text me, email me, call me, any of those things.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good deal.
I'm helping, you know, investors all the time with this stuff and helping them find deals. And I've helped people all over this country, you know, buy real estate in our area. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on again today. Again, a cool moment to have you as the first guest we've ever had a year and a half ago kicking this podcast off and now bringing you back on again. But pulling the curtain back on how people can do this for themselves. So.
Absolutely. And I guess I would just encourage if there's a listener out there that's never done anything with real estate, to have them get serious about getting educated and make it a priority in their lives. It's a way. I was explaining to Garrett before we got on the podcast that one of my goals with this entity is to grow it to a certain point to where I'll eventually pass it on to my kids and help create wealth for them. Yeah. And that's the power of this, is it can be something that can affect your families for years to come. And it's a way for you to leave a positive legacy for your family and for your kids. If that's your goal.
Awesome. Thank you. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.